Okay, so Perek Dalet. So in these prakim, Elisha really emerges. And the truth is that he's really unique in this regard. Elio started this, but he really carries it on, where the role of prophet becomes the role of miracle worker. You think about it, right? You go through Tanakh, the role of Nevi'im is very different at different points in Tanakh. In Shmuel, it's political. Right? His main jobs are appointing kings. Eliyahu is a mixture of a miracle worker and a rebuking prophet. The Nevi'im Achronim, or the ethical prophets, as they call them, are mostly about rebuke, where there's no miracles. It's signs, it's prophecies of destruction and the like. But Elisha is the miracle worker. In Perek Dalet, which we will not get through all of it because it is three packed stories. Hopefully we got through two of them, but we'll see. Elisha emerges as a miracle worker, but not just a miracle worker, but a miracle worker for the individual, right? For people, rather than for the nation. And that Eliyahu did a little bit of, but Elisha is the prime one. So the first story in the
Where Elisha came from, like about his family, anything.
I mean, we only know that right. Elio had met him, and he said, you know, leave your parents, and he said, I'm going to go say goodbye. You know, what else do we know about his family except that he left them, right? Not much. Then he loved them, right? He gave them a kiss,
but you,
right?
In general, you don't know the Nevi'im.
Right, some of them we meet there,
you know.
Right, Shmuel you know a lot, right, because his birth is dramatic with Hannah and Elkanah. But besides for him, what do you know about people, right? Yeshayahu, you know his father is Amot, so that's all you know about him. And Elio, we know nothing.
We don't know who the parents were.
Yeah, I mean, maybe we know their names, but okay. So Perek Dalet opens as follows. V'isha achat minishnei bnei hanevi'im tzaka l'isha lemor. Avdecha ishi mate. V'ata yadata ki avdecha haya yorei ad Adonai. V'anoshe ba lakachat et shnei yiladai lo lavadim. So a woman who was the wife of one of the students of the Nevi'im calls out to Elisha. She cries to Elisha and says, your servant, my husband, is dead. Now, your servant indicates, and this seems to be why this perek is particularly relevant here, is we've, you know, just the last few prakim, it's not just that we see Elisha's miracles, but we're also establishing that Elisha is the heir of Elio as head prophet. And this woman, when she approaches Elisha and calls her husband, who was a Navi, his student, his servant, that implies that at this point, at least, Elisha has taken on that role. People now recognize he's chief prophet, so if someone else is a Navi, then that person is his servant, his student. So her wife was, her husband had died, she was a widow. And she said, you know that he feared God. And now a creditor is coming to take my two children as slaves. Right? She comes in distress and she says, look, I'm out of money. And my husband, you know my husband. You know, it's not fair that my husband passes away. And now I might lose my children, which is not legal. It's not halachic. But the creditor, but it was a common practice in the ancient world. And, you know, the corrupt Israeli society at this point has adopted it. And the creditor is coming because I have no money to pay. So he's going to take my two children as slaves to pay back the debt. Now, Chazal assume, they try to figure out who is this person. Right? Do we know her husband or is he just some nameless prophet? So they assume, because of the Yarei Er Hashem, that it's Ovadia, because one of the only people in Tanakh who's called Yarei Er Hashem is Ovadia. Ovadia is Ovadia Sher Labayit, who we know protected the Nevi'i Hashem and hid them from Yizevel. And Chazal go farther and argue that she's not just coming and saying, look, my husband was a good person. She says, the reason I'm in debt is because my husband, Ovadia, he borrowed money to pay for the food for the 100 prophets he was illegally protecting in the caves, and it's that debt that I'm now repaying. Right, so Chazal try to bring all the stories together. But whatever it is, she turns to Elisha. So Vayomer, now what did she expect from Elisha? So probably what she expected from Elisha, which is what we'll see Elisha actually does later on, is she expected that Elisha would try to talk to the creditor. Right? She probably didn't expect a miracle. Because, you know, if you skip down later in the Perek, in the next story, where Elisha helps the Isha Shunamit, he calls to the woman. He also wants to help her. And he says, what can I do for you? Can I speak on your behalf to the king? Can I speak to the army commander? Right? He's not acting as prophet, magician, miracle worker, someone who speaks with God. He's speaking as a chash of a person, right? You know, can I help you? Can I intercede? You know, you're the poor woman here. They're coming to take your children. You don't have any social standing to pressure them to maybe extend the debt, to waive the debt. She probably expected that Elisha would use his clout, would use his influence to do something. But instead, she gets surprised. And Elisha says, Maya salach, higidi li malach babayit. And he says to her, what do you have in your house? Vatomer, ein l'shivchatcha chol babayit kiim asuch shamen. So she says, I have nothing in the house except a little bit of oil, a little jug of oil. Now this moment is quite dramatic, because when she says, right, you can always tell, right? This is one of those things. It's all about how you phrase things. Right? If you ask somebody, right, what do you have at home? So, and she probably meant to say nothing, right? Nothing. I have, what's her point? I have nothing except a little oil, right? I'm down to my last few pennies. I have the equivalent of nothing. Right? And as we'll see in a moment, instead of hearing, I have nothing, and the oil just being an example of how little she has, Elisha picks on this and says, oh, you have something. And that's going to be the key to her success. Vayomer, l'chi sh'ali lach kelim me'achutz, me'eit sh'chinayich kelim reikim al tamiti. So he says, go, borrow vessels from outside, from all your neighbors, empty vessels, right? Do not minimize. Take as many as you can. Don't take a few. Take as many as you can get your hands on. Uvat v'sagar tadelet ba'adich uva'ad ba'naich v'yotzakt al kol hakelim ha'ila v'amalei tasi. And then you will go home. You'll close the door. You and your son will go in, and you'll pour oil out of this jug, and you'll fill each one of them, right? You'll just pour it like it's like a stream, and you'll just keep putting things under. Vatelach miito, vadisgora delet ba'adal vadbanah, hey magishim meila v'himotzake. So she goes, and she closes the door for her and her children, and they bring her vessels, and she pours. Vahi kimelot ha'kelim v'tomer el binah, hagish elai od kli, v'yomer elai ein od keli, v'yomer Hashamen. And as they're filling it up, she says to her son, bring me more. And he says, we don't have any. That's it. And the oil stops. Vatavoa de gate Elisha Elohim. So she goes and she tells Elisha, Vayomer lechimechriat Hashemen, Vishalmi, Nishich, Vaat, Uvanech, Techie, Vanotar. He says, go sell the oil. And then you and your children will live on the remainder, live on the rest. So what's going on in this story? So the first question all the Mefarshim ask is, why did he need the oil? Right? Meaning, why can't Elisha just wave his magic wand and money will appear out of nowhere? Or why can't he wave his wand and the creditors will forget to ask for money? Right? Why does he need the oil? And the Mefarshim give a variety of answers. One that they say in different forms is that miracles don't happen from nothing, right? as much as power as a Navi has, they don't create Yesh Me'ayin. They don't create something from nothing. Only God creates something from nothing. The bracha that he's giving has to take effect on some object. They also say that God, that even if it's theoretically possible, we try to minimize miracles, right, and sort of unnaturally blessing something rather than create something from nothing is a minimizing of miracles, which we do try to do. Now that this story helps the Mefarshim understand the more famous but much later story of the Pach HaShemen of Chanukah, and many of the Mefarshim pick up on the comparison here. And the Taz, for example, says that, right, the Mefarshim, they deal with the question of the Beit Yosef. Right? The Beit Yosef says, why is it that we celebrate 8 days of Hanukkah if there was enough oil for one day? Right? Why don't you just celebrate for 7 days? That was the miracle. So some of the Mefarshim, based on this story, say, well, a miracle doesn't happen from nothing. Right? So what must have happened? Either the oil became super high quality and a little bit of oil lasted a whole day, or the oil just kept pouring for 8 days. Because you see in this story that the way God likes doing miracles is yesh me'yesh, is he will take what already exists and make it last longer, or make it increase without you realizing it, right? Instead of Eliyahu waving his wand over her little thing of oil and making it a big thing of oil, he says, take your little thing of oil and keep pouring it, and it'll just keep coming out, right? That's the type of miracle that God likes, is keeping the same, right? It looks the same, it looks like nothing has changed, but in fact something is. And therefore, they compare it to Hanukkah, and they say that must have been what's going on. The reason you celebrate 8 days is because the whole thing became blessed, but you didn't notice until 8 days, or it wasn't like it magically expanded, it just kept lasting. In whatever way it kept lasting, you used less, it just kept pouring. And that's what they derive from here. The second thing that the modern commentaries are very into is the notion that miracles, in order for a miracle to happen, it's best for the beneficiary of the miracle to put in their own effort. Right, that Elisha could just do it by himself, but he doesn't want it, right? He says, what do you have in your house? And he puts her in charge of actually performing the miracle, right? He just gives the bracha, he gives the command, but she's the one who's going to actually do it.
He didn't make her rich, though.
So he didn't make her rich. Now, why not? So some of the Mefarshim just say, look, this was the miracle. She went out, she borrowed 1,000,000 kalim, whatever she got, so that was enough to pay off the loan. It was enough money to last for a while. And that was the miracle, right? The miracle wasn't meant to make her rich. The miracle was meant to solve a local problem, right? This is the uniqueness of Elisha, right? Elisha solves local problems for other people. Eliyahu solves local problems, but for himself, right? When he makes because Elisha also makes someone's oil last for a whole year, right? When you compare it to Eliyahu's story, and here you get one of the differences, Eliyahu goes to the woman, and she says, look, I don't have enough food. And he says, don't worry, give me the food, it'll last all year. So he also makes the food last for a year. He makes the oil last for a year. But it's not to take care of the woman, it's to take care of himself. It's just that she doesn't have the food to provide for him, so he provides her with a miracle. Right? Elisha is the first person here who really performs miracles to help people, right? Rather than just to, for himself, and other people benefit by association. But Rav Samet takes a different perspective. And Rav Samet picks up on Charlie's question, but he also picks up on something else. And he says, if you look carefully, at first glance, you read the story, and you think Elisha gave her instructions, she listened to the instructions, and the oil increased, she had enough, she paid off her debts, she didn't have to lose her sons, and she had a little bit of money left over. But he says, if you're careful, that's not actually what happens. Because what does he tell her? Elisha tells her, "Lichi shali lach kelim menachutz, mei kol shcheinayach kelim rekim al tamiti." He says, "Go borrow as many cups and bowls and Tupperware and everything that you can to fill up oil. Right? Get as many as you can." What's the implication? The more vessels you have, the more oil will pour. The wealthier you are. And what does she... And then he says, what? Uvad v'sagarta delet ba'adeich, uvad banayich, v'yatzakla kol kelim ha'ila, v'amalei tasi. And then you'll go in, you'll shut the door behind you, and you'll pour the oil into each of the vessels as it's filled. Now, some of them, Farshim, also know that there is this... they ask, why is it that she has to keep pouring, and you keep moving the vessels under it? Why don't you do it the other way? And they suggest that it's trying to invoke the image of the wellspring, right? That he's essentially turning this jug into an ever-flowing wellspring of oil. Just like a spring, right? It looks small, but it just keeps flowing, so this becomes a magical spring, so it doesn't look miraculous, and that's why you keep having it moving it, but whatever it is. But what does she do? Vatelech meito vaskora delet bada. Right? She goes and closes the door. Right? That's it. Right? And it sounds like she didn't really believe him, and she didn't borrow, right? Because she just goes straight home, right? She just goes straight home, closes the door, and her kids brought her things, and she poured. And then he says, you look at Pasuk Vav, it makes sense, because what does it say? Vayhi kimelora kelim, when the vessels filled up, vatomer el bina, hagish elod keli, bring me another one. Vayomer la ein, oh, there's nothing left. Vayamod Hashem, and when she said there's nothing left, the oil stopped. Which implies, had there been another one, it would have kept going. But if she didn't get more, it's her own fault. There's still enough. She still, right, Elisha still provided the miracle that she needed to solve the problem, but he put it in her court. He said, if you believe what I'm saying, go get Kalim. You don't? Okay, you don't. Right? I'm not doing this miracle. I'm giving you the tools. Now do it yourself. Right? Have faith. It'll happen. What?
Interesting.
It's a very careful read of the story. Most of the Mepharshim don't say this, but it is a very careful read of the story. Yeah, I mean, it makes a lot of sense. Now, the Mepharshim say, now, why did he have to close the door? So Rashi already says, because miracles like to be private. Right? You like miracles to be private. Sanua, you don't need everybody to see. And it's also interesting that, even though it's meant to be private and it's inside, her sons, the ones who are going to be sold, are part of the miracle also, right? This is, you know, oh, it's all hands on deck, right? He gets everybody involved. And then she comes to Elisha, and she says to him, you know, what do I do? Now, why is she asking, what do I do? So many of the Mepharshim suggest, most of the Mepharshim say, what she's asking is, am I allowed to use this oil? And is it, you know, Kodesh? Is it miraculous? And therefore, holy? And Elisha tells her, no, go sell it. It's just oil. In the end of the day, it was produced by miracle, but it's just oil. It's okay. Alternatively, Rav Samit, following his own perspective, that she was of little faith at the beginning and therefore didn't borrow things, he says, no. She went back to him and says, what do I do? It stopped. You know, can I get a second chance? Right, you know, now I believe you. Can we start the? You know, now I'll go borrow things and I'll get more. And Elisha says, "No, look, it's not happening again. Don't worry. The oil that I gave you will be enough. And it's possible that a second miracle happened, that the prices went up of oil. Right? It's possible that what he's telling her is that, you know, there isn't enough oil." Under normal circumstances, the oil you had might not have lasted, but, you know, I've performed another miracle. If you go sell it now, you'll be okay. Yeah, exactly, right? Or something like that, right? Part of the miracle is that the price of the oil will give you what you need, but, again, Rav Samit, following his perspective, says, but he says to her, look, there's nothing I can do, right? This wasn't me, right? Elisha's brand of miracles is to say, I'm going to give you the tools, and if you believe me, if you have faith, and you take advantage of it, so you take advantage of it, it'll be great. You don't. So that is the first story. And again, in addition to all the internal issues in the story, the big thing to notice when comparing it to Eliyahu is the difference of the purpose of this miracle. Because again, here, the woman comes to Elisha. She has no personal relationship with him, except that her husband knew Elisha. And Elisha therefore feels a responsibility to her. But he's performing the miracle to help her, fundamentally. As opposed to Eliyahu, whose miracles were to help himself, who was being supported by this woman.
But we don't know the outcome of the story. It doesn't say she sold and she got money and she kept her son. We don't know.
So he
just tells her go sell, but we don't know if she went out and she sold and if she made enough money. We don't know.
Right. So the assumption is that, right, she does, because, you know, what we'll see in the next few prakim is that in general that's what happens, right? Elisha's miracles stick, and they last. Because the next story, which is much more famous, of the Elisha Shunamit, we do meet a second time later on, where Gehazi tells the story to the king, and she happens to show up. Right, she happens to show up and need something from the king. But the assumption is that, you know, is that it worked. Okay, what did you say, 20 you have to leave?
Yeah.
Okay, so we'll start the next story. The next story is a much longer story. And this is the... this again brings us to the similarities between Eliyahu and Elisha, but also their differences. So one day, Vahia Yom, Vayavor Elisha El Shunam, Visham Isha Gdola, Vatahazek Bo Lechol Lechem, Vahim Idei Avro, Yasur Shama Lechol Lechem. So one day Elisha went to Shunam, and a wealthy woman lived there, and she urged him to have a meal, and whenever he would pass, he would always stop there for a meal. And just on that point, the Gemara in Brachot has a very strange statement. And the Gemara in Brachot says that Shmuel, when he used to travel, he never stayed by anybody's house. Mm-hmm. Because the Pasuk says that he would bring his tent with him, he would pitch his tent. And in his final speech, he tells the Jewish people, I never took anything from you. I didn't take anything from you. Elisha, on the other hand, he has this wealthy woman who, as we'll see, every time he eats there, every time he passes, he eats there, and then, you know, let's just read the next pasuk, and then we'll come back to it. Vatomer Elisha, hinei na yadati ish Elohim, kadoshu over aleinu tamid. The woman said to her husband, you know, there's this holy man who comes this way regularly. Nasa na aliyat kir ktana v'nasim lo sham, mitav shulchan v'chisem v'narav, aya b'vao aleinu yasur shama. Let's make an attic apartment for him, right? A bed, a table, a chair, a lamp, so whenever he comes, he can stay there. Right, we'll have a guest room, and let's make a little guest apartment. And this way, Elisha will be comfortable, and he'll stay here every time, right? It won't just be that he happens to stay here. He knows he has a place. And that's what they do. So the Gemara comments that Harotze Lasot Kishmuel Yase, Harotze Shayase Kelisha Yase. One who wants to benefit like Shmuel, who wants to act like Shmuel and not benefit from people. So he shouldn't benefit based on the pasuk, Soni Matana Yechya, someone who hates gifts shall live. And one who wants to benefit, like Elisha, should also, right, he can do that. So you look at the Mefarshim, most people think that, you know, the novelty is Elisha, right? If you want to be, you know, totally like Shmuel, you don't want to benefit at all, that's great, that's the best, right? You won't be beholden to anybody. But if you want to take courtesies, you know, you want to stay by somebody's house, okay, you can be a normal person too. But Rashi there flips it. And Rashi says, no. If you want to do like Shmuel, it's permitted, and we don't consider an act of arrogance. Because Rashi assumes that Elisha is actually the normal one. Because think about it, we've met a lot of leaders like Eliyahu. Eliyahu barely gets a, right, he doesn't get along with people, right? The woman he stays at her house, he has a bad relationship with, right? She tries, when her son gets sick and dies, she blames him and she says, you came here to bring curse on me, right? People are scared of him, not, right? He doesn't have a warm, fuzzy relationship.
Social.
Yeah. Elisha is actually the given, right? Elisha, in general, is the polar opposite of Eliyahu. He's this soft person who the people feel comfortable coming to, right? Like the first woman. The first woman just said, you know, I need help. And he helps her. She just expects that he's going to be a comforting ear. He'll do something for her. And what the Gemara seems to be saying is that sometimes for a leader to be successful, he has to take things. Meaning he has to be normal, right? Normal people have guests and are guests at other people's houses. They do each other favors. Yes, it's true that if you're in a, that sometimes the best thing to do is to separate yourself and say, I can't have anyone think I'm beholden to them. That would be bad. But if you want to be the type of leader that people view as friendly, as caring, then Harotze Leonard, he wasn't doing it because he needed the money. Right? He was doing it because that's what normal people do. Right? You go around, you help people, and they like you, and they help you back, and you don't want to be standoffish. Right? There's that fine line, right? Some rabbis won't eat out at all, right? Because they don't want, because they know they can't eat at everybody, and they don't want people to think they only eat by board members, they only eat by big donors, right? And some people will eat everywhere, right? Or they don't eat out because they don't want to eat by people. They don't want to rely on the kashrus. So sometimes that's necessary, right? Because you don't want to show favoritism. You don't want to say, I only eat by donors. I only eat by the person whose kashrus standards. Some rabbis say, no, well, I trust everyone in my shul, right? Both of them have dangers. If you eat by everyone in your shul, you might actually end up eating not kosher. You might end up making somebody angry. But if you eat by nobody, right? So on the one hand, you don't show any favoritism, but some people view it as standoffish. Shmuel, you know, when he first starts off his career, he's a bit more, right? He has to criticize Eli. He's a political leader, right? He's a political leader. He's a politician. Politicians have to be much more careful about the gifts they take, right? You can't take too much ice cream. They'll be angry at you, right? Elisha isn't a political leader. Elisha is a welcoming spiritual guide. And what the Gemara seems to be saying is not just you could do either one, is that there are times, there are types of leaders who their relationship to the people is, say, is I'm austere, I don't benefit from people, I'm independent because I need to be independent to criticize you, to give mussar. I need you to not think that I'm being paid off by special interest groups. And there are other people that their role in the community is to just be one of the guys, but spiritual, so that people feel comfortable coming to them with their problems. And Elisha is that model. Right, Elisha is the type of person that they love having over, right? They just, and we'll see that the contrast between the Isha Shunamit and Elisha, as opposed to the woman that Eliyahu stayed at, is night and day, right? Eliyahu, the woman wants, even after a year of staying there, the woman is sick of him, wants to kick him out of the house, blames him for problems that happen. Here, the woman, he comes a few times and her reaction is, we've got to build, right, we've got to add on an extension to our house because we need him to be comfortable. We need a private bathroom, private kitchen, right, whatever. And that seems to be Elisha's personality. Okay, because you have to go, so we'll save the majority of this story till last time, but that we'll see the second major miracle of Elisha's life.